Welcome to The Critique. We're looking at a really detailed submission today, covering the African financial ecosystem, specifically private capital evolution continent-wide, and Kenyan corporate governance for issuers. Quite a lot there.
Yeah, it's very rich material. Sophisticated stuff, definitely. But, you know, there's a real chance here to link these two parts, the capital flows and the governance rules, more tightly for maximum impact.
Okay, right. So that seems to be a key thread building this top-tier financial structure in Kenya and seeing the capital follow. So, critique number one. Let's talk about explicitly connecting that regulatory strength with the appeal to the capital markets.
Exactly. That's crucial. The way it's presented now, you've got this great detail on Kenya's mandatory governance standards, and then separately, you've got its success in attracting capital. We need to explicitly show how one drives the other. They feel a bit like parallel tracks right now.
Okay, so where's the gap exactly? Let's pinpoint it. The governance report, it shows issuers hitting what, a 73.56% overall score. That's pretty good, and it's driven by these new mandatory PLSD regulations from 2023. So the compliance side is clear.
Right, and then the other report, the Africa Private Capital one, it highlights Kenya's results, you know, most active in East Africa, 333 deals from 2016 to mid-2022, a competitive IFC. But the weakness is just that functional separation. The deep dive on governance doesn't explicitly feed the story of why funds are choosing Nairobi. We need that causal link.
Got it. Yeah, the reader needs that aha moment, connecting the rules to the results. So the suggestion? We think you should introduce a kind of high-level synthesis, showing this governance maturity is a growth driver, basically position Kenya's compliance as a real selling point in the region.
Yeah, make it less descriptive, more strategic. And to make that really concrete, we need examples, right? Ways to actually build that bridge in the text. For instance, you detail how tough some POLD rules are to meet.
Okay, yeah. Like Clause 8.21 in the POLD Regs 2023, the one requiring shareholders to approve certain policies. That specific rule, that mandatory transparency, you could link that directly to what funds look for, things like political and fiscal stability or business-friendly regulation mentioned in the Africa report. See? Mandatory approval is stability in practice.
Ah, I see. So you're translating a specific compliance point into an investor benefit. Nice. And you could do that for the hot sectors too, right? Financials dominate deal volume, you mentioned, especially fintech.
And the governance report flags the push for integrated reporting, IFRS S1 and S2, those new global sustainability standards everyone's talking about.
Exactly. So the argument becomes, look, adopting these global standards, this integrated reporting, that's critical infrastructure, just like roads or broadband. It reassures those tech investors, secures that fintech capital. So a tough compliance goal, like getting ready for IFRS S1, S2, actually becomes a magnet for international funds seeking that kind of certainty and transparency.
Okay, that's a powerful link. Showing regulation actively attracts investment. And that idea, regulation as infrastructure, kind of leads us naturally to the second critique, doesn't it? Focusing more internally now on optimizing corporate governance, especially within those big complex group structures. That drop in the board operations score was pretty noticeable.
Yeah, down almost 4% to 67.93%. That definitely needs addressing. So critique two, the guidance on independent non-executive directors, the INEDs, especially how they work in groups. It needs to be sharper, more practical, offer real solutions.
Right. The report correctly identifies the weakness, yeah? It says the decline is largely down to issuers in groups, like banks, struggling with the POLD definitions. Specifically, putting executives or employees from a related company onto the board as a non-exec or an independent non-exec. That clashes with Regulation 2, compromises independence.
And the report flags that tension well. But it sort of stops there. It highlights the problem, how do you keep independence but still get the benefit of group expertise, but doesn't really offer structural ways around it beyond just comply with the rule. So the suggestion is, okay, acknowledge that need for knowledge sharing within groups, but then propose alternative ways to get that expertise without breaching independence rules.
Okay, so bridging the gap without breaking the rules. How? If you can't second employees from related companies onto the board, what's the alternative? An advisory role?
Exactly. We need a mechanism for their expertise without giving them a director's vote or formal status on that specific issuer's board. So, one idea. Suggest boards could formally set up something like a group subject matter expert pool. People from related companies, non-execs maybe, can be consulted, brought in for specific advice on operational stuff, but without being directors. That keeps the independence firewall strong, but still taps into that vital internal knowledge.
That's interesting. A formal but non-director consulting pool? Okay. And building on that, what about the other issue you flagged? Existing INEDs being put onto subsidiary boards. That breaches the pecuniary interest rules, right? Dilutes their independence across the group?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. So instead of seconding them, maybe the focus should be on strengthening the training mandate, which is actually mentioned in the report already, section 10.D, I think. Ensure these independent directors get top-notch training on group-level strategy, but get it externally, through independent courses, consultants, whatever. That way, they understand the big picture, provide proper oversight, but without creating those material interest conflicts that come with internal secondment. Empower them through knowledge, not by bending the rules.
Okay, empowering independence through external training. I like that. Right, so we've hit the regulatory proof point and the internal governance structure fix. Let's pivot back to the market view for the third critique. This one's about the structure, the flow of the African Private Capital Report. The story of recent growth is powerful, but maybe it's buried a bit?
Yeah, is the structure maybe a bit too historical? Does it risk underplaying just how fast things are moving now? Our thought here is the narrative about disruptive growth could hit harder if you maybe flip the structure. Use those big future trends you identify as the lens through which you look at the historical data.
Okay, so the weakness is basically burying the lead. Like the really dramatic stuff, venture capital grabbing 70% of deal volume recently, utilities jumping from 2% to 19% of deal value. That comes quite late in the analysis after all the history. It kind of dampens the excitement, the urgency.
Exactly. So the suggestion is restructure around those key future trends you've already identified. VC dominance, the surge in private debt. Frame the historical stuff as the setup, the precursor to these big shifts happening now. That should grab the reader immediately and keep their focus on the high growth areas.
Right, make it punchier. So, concretely, instead of walking through the shift from generalist to sector-specific funds chronologically, how would that look?
Well, you could start that whole section by declaring the fintech imperative, right? That's a key future trend you mentioned. Lead with that. Then immediately show the result. Use that West Africa data, 75% of financial deals being fintech. Then you circle back and say, and look, here's the history that got us here. VC and growth funds took over from buyout funds precisely because the market saw this massive fintech opportunity coming.
Ah, okay. So history confirms the present trend rather than just leading up to it slowly. Got it. And you do the same for the growth drivers? Like the demographic dividend creating an infrastructure gap?
Yeah, don't just state the driver. Immediately connect it to the investment action. Talk about the infrastructure gap. And in the same breath, bring in that massive jump in utilities investment, that 19% deal value figure. Link it straight to the need for private debt for climate finance, for example. Show the problem and the market solution side by side. Make it one integrated, future-focused story.
Okay, yeah, that feels much more dynamic. Weaving the drivers and the trends together from the start. Excellent. Well, this has been a really insightful look at these two pieces on the African financial ecosystem. Really focusing on connecting the dots and sharpening the narrative.
Absolutely. So just to recap the three main things we talked about. First, really hammer home that explicit link between strong local governance, like Kenya's POLD rules, and actually attracting that high growth capital. You've got to show governance drives the investment decisions.
Yep. Second, for board independence, especially in those group structures, move beyond just stating the rules. Offer those creative, practical fixes, like that subject matter expert pool idea, to keep the expertise flowing without breaking independence rules.
Right. And third, restructure that historical data in the Africa Private Capital Report. Lead with the future, the dominance of VC, the boom in private debt, and use the history to back up that urgent present-day narrative.
And to make these actionable, maybe start by drafting that template or guidance for those non-director advisory roles for group experts. And maybe start remapping the market analysis section to kick off with that utilities and fintech surge.
Exactly. We're really looking forward to seeing how these adjustments strengthen the impact of this work. Please do send it back our way once you've had a chance to integrate these suggestions. We'd be keen to see the next version.